Reservable. It's the reservable. It's the reservable. It's the reservable. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Reset Rebel podcast with me, Jo Yule. And for today's episode, we are overlooking the fabulous Dalt Villa, the World UNESCO Heritage Site in the distance that is, of course, going to be playing host to the International Music Summit this week. So feels very fitting to be sitting here with this incredible vista, which is visible from La Patisserie Margaux, which is a very fancy Parisian, gorgeous bakery in the heart of the Marina Botafoc. And I discovered these incredible cakes when I was actually backstage at TEDx a few weeks back hosting, as you've been hearing on the last few episodes. And I just sort of schnaffled one of these very delicious looking items into my handbag. And when I actually ate it, I couldn't resist but email the bakery personally to tell them that it was the best cake I think I've possibly ever eaten. And I'm not a massive cake fan, but I did allow this one past my lips and it was a glorious experience. So for today's show, I'm gathered here with the wonderful proprietor and head honcho, shall we say, for the time being, of the establishment, Julio Gatia, and his incredible partner, Richard Westerby, who also have another podcast series called IVF Daddies. We're going to put a little link to that in the episode show notes so you can go and check that out. Boys, welcome to the Reset Rebel. Thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you so much for having us here. And I'm very, very glad to hear that the TEDx had an impact, because for me it was a lot of work and very intense to make sure that we participate and we don't miss the date and we don't miss the deadline. And feeding 400 people plus the VIPs, it was not easy. It was a lot of work. And especially one of the things that I wanted to highlight talking to Mia, who's a woman, talking to you, who are a woman, my business partner that created this, Jocelyn, she's a woman. Our people in the lab, the most of them are female. So we are probably the patisserie or restaurant that is going to be on Facebook with the most amount of women.
Richard?
Hi.
There are a lot of women involved in TEDx. It's one of the things that I did mention on stage, that it's a very feline creation. And there's a lot of very powerful and very strong and very vocal women in the team. So yeah, it's a thing in Ibiza.
Feline, isn't that a cat?
We are pussycats, really, puss. Most of us.
Oh, okay. Oh, God.
Are we going there?
Pat the puss, honey. Pat the puss.
It wasn't long before we mentioned the word pussy, was it? But we sort of did that quite a lot.
Pussycat
TEDx,
dolls,
really.
Are they performing IMS? I don't know, like, yeah, sorry. Hi, Richard. Yeah, so hello.
Thank you.
I have nothing to do with the patisserie apart from eating all the cakes, which is why I'm putting on so much weight.
That is actually not true. Richard has been a huge part of the patisserie because, of course, it started as a passion project. And as you know, in Ibiza, is a seasonal island. It could last, I don't know, 3 months, 4 months. What is the active life of yacht villas and here? So started as a passion project. And Richard comes from background in England of finance. And he has helped me structure numbers and Excel sheets that to me is like right next to a fax machine. Old then days in the 90s, very vintage.
With his abacus.
And so Richard has created a format of tracking the cost and the numbers of the patisserie and making sure that we go from a passion project to a proper business, to the point that people like Facefood and people like TEDx say, oh, wait, what group do you belong? I'm like, we don't belong to any group. It's just a woman that started it. And I am here joining her because she has two kids and she's in California. And she's going to come soon to stay in the summer. And they were like, how can you be not part of a group and taste the same or better and maintain consistency? And I think that also has been a huge part of what Richard has been doing with the finances and the numbers. So he's behind with the Excel sheets and the formulas. And I think he deserves his flowers.
Mm. It's very early to be talking about Excel sheets. I think we shouldn't start this podcast formally, actually, or go any further down the line before we've cheersed with this rather beautiful glass of rosé that you poured me at 11:30 a.m. in the morning, which I wasn't expecting, really. I was thinking of coffee. But
girl,
the bakery is closed.
You've never been on a yacht? You don't start drinking at 9 a.m.?
Hashtag only in Ibiza.
Only
it's
in
true.
Ibiza, exactly.
I'll take it. Oh, that's delicious. Thank you. What is that?
Whispering Angel.
What is the fruit that goes in wine?
Are you talking about Julio again?
No, what's the fruit that goes in
what's the fruit that goes in wine? It's a grape.
Grapefruit.
Grapefruit juice.
It's fermented grapefruit juice. It's not grape. It's fermented grape juice. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what brought you to Ibiza? Because obviously you were a photographer working in the States originally.
Yes. So my photographer career started 20 years ago, and there was a lot of, I had zero business intention. My photography was my business card to allow myself to get into places. Almost like Andy Warhol invented interview magazines so he can get invited to events.
Mm.
I said, if I make women wear it beautiful and if I photograph them beautiful, they're going to want me around. And then it became a series of all these like rich families and rich women that the husbands will only let them fry in their private jets with like the gay guys, you know, so and have like in their business and help them out. And I was good at hair and makeup and make people feel beautiful. So I will always travel all the time. And one of the places I will travel a lot was Ibiza. And I will work for the closings and the openings. But all my memory of Ibiza was a van, a villa, a backstage, a green room, a van, a villa.
Anything beginning with V?
Vegan.
Vera. Anyone got any Veras?
Yeah.
Nice. And how did you guys meet? I think Richard should answer this one. I'm fascinated to hear Mr. Westerby's perspective there.
He has a version.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he does.
So I grew up in Spain. So my parents live in the south of Spain. But I've been coming to Ibiza for 20 years because my best friend lives here. Mm. And I took my children to Madrid for schooling. I wanted them to learn a little bit how to speak Spanish. So we came for 3 months. And I met this one on day 3. And
on day 6, he left.
On day 6, I left. I was done. He's and then he just chased me. Literally wouldn't leave me alone. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Aww.
No, it was very cute because I'd recently separated and I needed a new start. And I got my new start. And then that was in Madrid. And then Julio moved to Ibiza 2 years ago to work in Dolce & Gabbana down here.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year joined Jocelyn here at the Patisserie. Mm. So I'm back and forth between London and Ibiza, trying to spend more time here if I can.
Because there was a moment when I'm Italian, right? So I'm residency in Spain. But then I was just like suddenly spending too much time in London and they were like, oh, I have to go back to Spain and look at a wall for a certain amount of time and then go back to London. The difference is what we didn't know is like London can come to Europe for 3 months. I can go there for 6 months. I mean, apparently I'm not going to go into the law, but now you have to buy a visa, Brexit, blah, blah, blah. But then I had more opportunity to go there and I worked from home and then I created the IVF Daddies podcast because he has kids with IVF. He works in IVF and surrogacy. I went to all the seminaries traveling with him because, you know, we're very healthy codependent.
Is there such a thing as healthy codependence? I'm like,
I tend to put all my eggs in one basket, but this time we put both all of our eggs in one basket.
I think you told that one before. I liked it though.
And it's Pasqua, so we have more eggs here. And then
are you gonna have more kids?
No.
Yes, we have embryos frozen. He thinks no, but he's going through the 13, 12 year old phase and he's enjoying
twins.
The kids.
I have 12 year old twins and it's challenging.
I'm sure it is.
But it's like, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, you're building a plane on the way down. And when the plane does this, you're like, let's find another plane
down. Hold on to your
hats. Yeah. But I think what's really interesting is having twins and coming here to Ibiza, that there doesn't seem to be a lot for children of that age to
do. That's true.
And that for me is a struggle because they come, we sit by the pool, we go to the beach. My son doesn't like the beach.
They cannot microdose yet.
But and they're not into the drug scene just yet.
That's good. Yeah, that's positive.
Thankfully. Yeah, they're 12. But it's challenging. Like so if anybody knows anything for 12-year-olds to do, please let me know.
Yeah, no, I think it is definitely an absolute paradise when the kids are really young. And I think obviously as they get quite a bit older into their 18s and advanced years, that's an easy problem to solve. But yeah, I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't have 12-year-old twins. Thank God.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would be able to take care of them. But I think, there's a lack of real stimulation here, mentally as well as culturally and artistically. And, you know, obviously music is one thing, but it's only one area that really...
I've taken horse riding. There's the alpaca farm, you know, you very rapidly run out of things to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, but then the other thing is like, it makes me really happy to slightly change things up. Like Ibiza is like a misfits, a island full of misfits. And then a woman approached me saying, we're in the mom's club. And I'm like, Ibiza has a mom's club with no gay dads. Like, we think we're woke. Mm-hmm. And we're still not, we're like one eye woke. And then I'm like, why can you add me to that group? I have two kids. I feel discriminated. Why moms have to be only moms?
And what did she say?
Oh, are you added to the group now?
Oh, that's nice.
And then we had a lunch. We had a breakfast. We had a yoga class. And it turned out amazing. And because
I'm so happy that you actually forced the issue there. Good for you.
Yeah.
Impressive.
This one, I can see where forcing an issue. I'm like, wow.
He's more pragmatic. When you talk to Richard, he will make you feel better about yourself. And when you talk to me, I'm like, where are the law? What walls do we have to break? Who do we need to break a leg?
Slightly more antagonistic.
Well, you know, I would say chalk and cheese, but in a very good, wonderful, complimentary, chalky, cheesy kind of way.
Chalky, what? Cheesy.
Cheesy, chalky. Does that work better? I do quite like chalky cheeses, though.
Can you?
I mean, I'm a big cheese fan.
No. I'm a big brie guy. I like brie. I like creamy.
Gooey. Yeah. Sticky.
Yeah.
Oozy.
Otherwise, I'm like, you're just like, how do you eat that? It's just like cheddar gets stuck in you.
Are you guys talking about dairy only?
Water, yeah. He's lactose intolerant.
Is this a code?
Allergic to shellfish. Can't eat gluten. And he runs this place.
You're allergic to gluten.
I am allergic to gluten.
What happens? Do you swell up like a puff of fish?
I swell up. Stop it. I don't. I'm allergic to gluten. And I'm if anybody stops drinking milk for a month, you become intolerant because you drop the enzyme. And so our conversations at our dinner table is like, why are you drinking almond milk? I'm like, because I'll tell you how the story goes.
Don't go there.
I will go there. Like, this is what happened to milk. You rape the cow, you take the baby away, you plug it into a machine, you suck her dry, rape her again, take the baby away, and when she's useless, they throw her to die, and then they can't even use the skin for a bag. So that's why I don't drink milk.
Oof, we've gone downhill here.
Rapidly. That's why I said don't.
And the kids are like, huh?
I do call it cow pus, really. I don't find it something that I feel good about drinking.
You don't it's like not milk?
No, I don't touch it. No, I haven't done for a really long time. Okay. You know, unless I accidentally forget to say those words before the barista pours me a cup of cortado with normal milk in it, then I feel slightly obliged to drink it. But I would never choose to. I would never purchase it in the supermarket.
Oh.
No.
I quite like milk.
Oh my God, okay, you're from England.
Correct.
But don't you remember at school they used to give us little bottles of milk?
Oh, no, that's exactly why I don't like it. I wasn't only allowed to go out to play at break time unless I finished this entire three quarters of it. No, it was massive.
Almost like traumatized by school?
I was, completely. Okay, but that was the most disgusting thing in the world, drinking like almost an entire pint of milk before I could go out to play.
Westwood, that was the school I went to. We grew up in like neighbouring villages.
I was in Esher at Claremont Fancourt, and that was a real thing, like not being able to go out and have any fun until I'd been force-fed this disgusting filth.
Oh my God, did you ever have canned ravioli? Or canned tin spaghetti?
Yes, I did.
That.
Spaghetti hoops.
Oh, that is literally my trauma from school.
Okay, this is another episode. School traumas and
that's
England.
Where the gluten intolerance came from.
And here we are in the patisserie.
Spaghetti alphabet.
Can that what for later.
We'll can that for later, yeah.
But you are from England, and he's from England, and the way he drinks tea has been criticized, scrutinized, annihilated by his British people. Can you explain how you
But the way he drinks rosé, he does it like a king.
No, but can you explain?
A prince.
A queen.
A queen.
Can you explain?
The royalty.
Exactly. I have tea with milk.
But how do you drink your tea?
In a cup.
No.
I don't know what...
What does Kat say about your drinking tea?
So we have a friend of ours, Kat, who doesn't like milk, and literally she'll put like one drop in it so it looks like it's just dirty water. And then mine is incredibly milky. I don't care.
It's like a drop of tea on milk. Yeah, and
I just pour milk into it. I'm
honey.
Like,
anyway,
honey.
I love honey.
I mean, tea drinking is a very British thing. It's not something that I do. I do drink the odd infusion here and there, but I'm not one of these like tea drinking people. But I did notice on your awning, if you will allow me to call it such a thing, that it says Café de Thé, which, you know, I really love the exterior of this particular building. And I've walked past it like 1,000 times. I'd never been in until a week ago when I met you wonderful people. But I would really love to ask, because you alluded to it when we last met, but I never heard the full story. This used to be a brothel house. Can you tell us a little bit about this story before we move back to IVF and ping around like the pinball wizards that
we
are?
So this probably was the worst street ever. because it was just like a marina. And then you had the old Roberto Cavalli, the black store over there. It used to be the old Roberto Cavalli. The black shop that is abandoned.
Okay.
That has graffitis and stuff.
Yeah.
And this used to be the VIPP, the whorehouse, VIP prostitutes.
Mm.
And then Keepers next door was like the truck driver club where like you walk in and it smells like... Like you left
this
beers.
This one smelled of and something, and that one smelled of something else.
Bit spit and sawdusty, like a dive bar.
Oh my God! We destroyed it. We saged it. There's sage inside the walls. There's like rocks and crystals and amethyst inside every wall. We brought a feng shui, like every religion, every form of cleansing, like antibacterial gel face masks.
Fantastic. And how was that? Did you personally get down on your hands and knees and scrub the floors?
To be honest, not myself, but my business partner did. She was told, you're never going to get those permits. It's Ibiza. You're never going to get this. You're never going to get that. And she was determined. She never took no for an answer. Jocelyn was very, very good at building this, except because she lives the lifestyle. It wasn't like, oh, I have a dream of selling croissants. It's like, I travel to Paris every 2 weeks. Mm. Now I'm a mom. I cannot travel to Paris every 2 weeks because it's like, it's difficult. Like, I just had a baby. So why don't we just bring Paris here? So they,
I like it.
Yeah, they, mm. She built this, and she built this to the T, from the color to the lights to, and all the permits, like every single permit, the floor, the coloring, she was on it like no one. It wasn't like she just hired a bunch of people and she was
in her
house.
What was the state of the building when she had to kind of transform it?
It was in perfect state. It was fully functioning whorehouse.
So it was a very upmarket establishment. Because I never obviously crossed the threshold being of the feline variety, as we established earlier. It's not something I thought, oh, I'll pop in there. Obviously, I've been to Passion Cafe and seen the through traffic, which is always a spectacle, shall we say, while one was consuming a green juice of a Monday morning after the gym.
Bob.
Oh, look. Somebody's off to have a morning meeting.
That is
very professional.
That is something that now I can reverse the question to you, because I don't know.
Hang on, this is my podcast, Julia.
Yeah. But no, like, I would like to know for you, from your perspective, what is like because Passion used to be in our real estate, and they moved because Patisserie Margaux gave such a facelift to the entire street, to the point to having Suma, Novikov, Ciprani, Morena, all this, the new stores, the new passion, all of that. But I cannot imagine what it's like to going through the whorehouse to get a smoothie.
Well, you're not going to get away with that one, are you? You'd have to put a bin bag over your head, to be fair, to there's no real backdooring it as such, because it's a very frontal location and it's, you know, right bang smack on the main road. So, I mean, I admire anybody that's got the gumption. The chutzpah to stroll through these front doors in such a public arena. And I think, you know, fair play if you're going to do it. I mean, you can't be too sneaky about it, in theory. Yeah. But you would in London, probably.
In London,
it's a whole different ballgame over there.
Yeah. But have you noticed that this street became Mayfair?
I have, yeah. It's a gentrification, I think, that's just happened in Ibiza in general. Not just here, but everywhere, right? It's like the VIP thing and the beach clubs and the pricing and the general clientele from all stretches of Europe. I mean, everybody's coming here, particularly, I think, since COVID, specifically when, you know, there was less people coming, but the kinds of people that came back after COVID were not the people that didn't have buckets of cash, because the people that were obviously earning a lot less weren't able, I think, to come here after that. And there was a real differentiation between the haves and the have-nots. And suddenly, you know, the money, the more moneyed kind of tourists came here. And I think the restaurants were reporting a lot of a higher spend, but the tables were a lot further apart and there was a lot less people in the restaurants. So I think, you know, there was a very major shift in the kind of person that was coming to Ibiza. So I think this just naturally reflects.
And have you seen that continue? Or have you seen it revert a little bit?
No, it hasn't reverted. I mean, no one's gone, oh yes, I'll put my prices back down again. I mean, that is where I think I saw something in Ibiza that I was like, oh, I don't know if I like this, because I think the prices went sky high because people hadn't been earning money for a really long time, but I don't think they went back down again. And now I think we've hit a plane where a lot of people just can't afford to come here anymore. And unfortunately, unfortunately for us, there are a lot of other amazing islands around Europe that are just not quite as expensive, like Croatia or Santorini.
Not Santorini, because this volcano is about to erupt.
Yeah. Oh, God. No one wants that.
So we're going to get more traffic here, more tourism, more money.
But there is, yeah, there's a demand. There's still a massive demand for Ibiza. Yeah. And you can't, you know, people say, oh, you know, would you consider moving to Mallorca or Menorca because it's a little bit cheaper? And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't have what Ibiza has. What we have here is inimitable.
To me, Ibiza, like growing up in New York, to me, Ibiza is similar. It's a Rolodex of misfits and people that gave up a lot of things to start alive. So if you're in London and a Chanel store closes, you don't even notice. A patisserie closes, you don't even notice, because three new open. If you're here and some like a big name like Ushuaia changes, you notice. Or like Juntos changes, you notice. So for us, one of the things that I've noticed is when I went to the Moët Hennessy and the Bee Drinks event and the Face Food event, every corner was like, oh my God, I love your product. Where can I get it? Like Barcelona, Madrid. Everything comes from the peninsula. Everything comes frozen. And for us, we have an agroturismo. We have a lab in Figueretas. It opens every day. We make everything from scratch. Other than the wine, we made vinosserie, bread, cakes, wedding cakes. And to the point that, and as you say, like the housing prices are expensive. I call it, have you seen the movie 51st Date with Drew Barrymore?
Yes, I love it.
I feel like every summer, Ibiza is Drew Barrymore 51st Date. You have to go to every restaurant, to every place, to meet the manager, to meet the team, to meet... Because when I get orders of gigantic cakes delivered, we have friction, and then we're like, we don't have where to put it. And I'm like, we're very equipped. We have a van that is refrigerated. And but
you might like to come and sit in that, actually, and go cruising with you in the summer.
I've delivered to Formentera, and we have to park the van open. And sometimes it's like, you want to get in the van, right? But I just tell the teams, it's like, enjoy the day, have lunch.
Sometimes I just do my emails in the car with the aircon on full whack in July. It's the happiest place to be, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy business. I mean, there's a lady I met one time at a party who has like a frozen... It was at the BDXY launch last year with Luke Evans, the actor. And she was doing these strawberries, chocolate-covered strawberries. And I was like, what a hilarious business idea, because how are you going to get chocolate covered strawberries that are in
with him,
mint condition?
With Luke Evans? Yeah. You'll get anything.
I was impressed. He's a handsome man, actually. I got to say. He's very nice. Really struggling not to dribble.
A few times. He's very sweet, him and his partner.
The loveliest man. Does he come in?
Yeah. Well, they have a house in Selina.
You just drop a name.
Oh, sorry. Did I drop a clang? Sorry.
That's 50 euros in the naughty pot.
You should interview him.
I would love to interview him. I mean, I did interview him. That's actually what I was doing at the BDXY launch on the top of that hotel, which I'm not actually going to...
Do you know you're being interviewed?
I mean, that's the real question here.
We're whining, drinking.
No, but it was on the top of that terrible hotel that's 5-star, allegedly, on Talamanca, which we're not gonna name because they don't deserve it. But it was the top floor.
It starts with what letter?
It's the hotel that shot me next. And it's the Voldemort.
Yes, exactly. And it had a little bit of a revamp. And now they think it's a 5-star hotel. So it was on the roof of there with all these gorgeous friends who were just...
Oh, that's when he launched the bikini.
Yeah, his label.
Look at her know he wants about it.
There you go. You see, I was asked to go and interview him and his stylist and his partner, who's an architect and obviously has part of the business. Yes. So it was a panel and we were chatting, but... I mean, you know, my mouth was mostly on the floor and I tried to hold it together and look like I was very nonchalant. But on the inside, I was like, oh my God, never seen so many
handsome
delightful men in my entire life. And it was that most of them were in his little briefs that he was selling for the beach.
Is it
and
I was just like,
has he just got socks in there or is that real? No. I just don't know. And I probably shouldn't, you know, find out.
Yeah.
I don't think they want me to find out either because they're definitely not interested in me. But they were all
gorgeous. Sell them to the patisserie.
I was honestly having a lovely time. Yeah. And I actually got paid to do that. So, happy days.
he's
more
very
of that,
sweet.
Please, if anyone's listening and wants to hire me for boys, you know, fashion wear and general frivolity on the roof of a hotel, I'll take it.
Thank you very much. Exactly.
What would you like to be doing this summer? Obviously, you've got the IVF Daddies podcast and this amazing bakery, but what's your real focus together as a couple right now?
Well, the challenge is, obviously, it's Ibiza in summer. So we will be here. He'll be working. Like last summer, he was working from 5 a.m. through to 11 p.m. every day. So I was just hanging out. And then afterwards, that's
trying not to be too codependent.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like literally I'm like, oh, I miss you.
No. Oh, that's cute.
Oh, it's sickening.
No, it's cute. I like it.
But I'll be here with the children probably for one of them because my ex has them for a month. I'll have them for a month. I don't know. Mostly what I like about Ibiza is you just come here and you can just be. There's no pressure to, at least I don't find any pressure to be somebody other than just you in that moment.
And also what I love about Ibiza is like, it's such a difficult island to be here. It's not provincial. It's not like everybody was born here. Get out of my town. You're taking my job. It's so difficult to be here that every person that you meet is a Rolodex of amazing minds, amazing story to tell. And people that I've never met anybody that's like, oh, I hate being here. If you hate it, the island kicks you out. Everybody is like with the vibrant energy, let's fight for it. It's like if you have like no money today, it's not because you're poor, it's because you put it in your business. It's like, it's like a different type of mentality. And then, and then you connect with amazing people. And then I have a friend of mine, I remember, this is like boat in 1 hour with my kid. And then I just took the iPad's kid, get the swimsuit, we're going to the boat. One kid was accelerated. The other one was just like not into, like he's very spontaneous a year in advance. And then he was like frowny. I went to the candy shop, I bought all like the treats and he still was like forcing the frown because he was getting better and better. And then suddenly the kid was like in the water having the best time. And that would like in London is like, would you like to meet in 3 months from now from 5 to 7?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. And, you know, I mean, well, who would have thought that we'd be having a business meeting in this wonderful establishment just a week ago? You just, you know, you never know where your job or your, you know, happy place is going to be on this island until suddenly, you know, the things can change and unexpected situations, both in work, I think, and socializing can pop up at the...
But you have to have the mentality of that as well, because... You know, when I come from London, it takes me a few days to adjust. because obviously London is very rigid. You've got your meetings, da da da. And then that spontaneity angle isn't always there. And so then it is sometimes a challenge to go, okay, we're ditching that plan because I don't want to have that meeting, or I can do it on a phone and I'll be on a boat, you know, because we're really lucky we go on boats. But like,
how can you have a meeting on a phone? Like, sometimes I have emails and I say, this needs to be a full face meeting because I need you to see my eye roll.
It's called Zoom. I Zoom on my phone all the time.
Yeah, but I'm going to take a Google Meet at 7 o'clock tonight. And I was like, okay, I'm either going to be at the Hub, which is my co-working space where my office and my studio is, and I might be able to dive out of the party with like Sasha and Bushwhacker, which is the opening of IMS, into an office and take it. Or I might be out shopping for a new outfit for the episodes I'm going to record on Thursday in Ibiza Town. And my boyfriend was like, what are you talking about? You can't do that. I was like, well, why the hell not?
But it's this that is Ibiza, mentality, exactly.
And it's a busy time of year. Yeah. You got to just take it where you can, right? These guys are in America. So when it's good for them, it's really not good for me. It's like 7 o'clock in the evening. It's like, it's just, you've got to take it while you can. And I think like, as long as you show up, and you don't cancel, which is what I was very tempted to do this morning when I was having a slight meltdown after 4 days of nothing being open in Spain and like really massively on the back foot for all of the things I need to do this week. It's like, you know, my trousers need to go to the dry cleaner and it doesn't open till 10 o'clock because it's Spain. And then maybe I need to go and buy another outfit and I can't find my cables.
And because it's Spain.
Exactly. This is like all these like variables that suddenly I hadn't thought about until this morning. It was like, Christ,
and this is
I can't
fabulous.
Go and do this wonderful interview that and I really want to do and drink rosé because I've got a job to do.
And then you
we
look
actually get paid for.
And then you look wonderful, and nobody's going to get near you, smell your pants, so it's fine.
My pants smell amazing. My pants always smell amazing. But the thing is, I just think, you know, you always say in your mind that you can't do something. And I was in quite a bad mood this morning because I was like, I just can't. This is all too much. But then I'm sitting here having an amazing time, and the rest of my day will flow because I've just completely changed my mindset by doing the thing that I love to do, which is recording this podcast and making an episode.
And all the like intrinsic part of like, if this doesn't go well, I don't feel well, so let's just find an excuse to not to do it, and then we do it. But when you're in Ibiza, it's different. It's like, if you ask me to do TEDx in London, when am I ever going to connect with anybody in London? But I'm in Ibiza, I have a patisserie, I'm all about giving and building community and just whatever, anything, let me know. I'll participate. I'll have an amazing product to give. And I want to celebrate, especially celebrate women that work. I mean, women that are going after what they want and women that are not settling. And TEDx was, the reason for me to do TEDx was a way to have, to let people know we exist. We're here. We're here for you. What do you need? And it brought amazing connections, you know?
What connections did you get out of it?
Well, you. Well, I got connections like you. I got connections that things that have been 3 years in the making, but people don't take you seriously because you don't belong into a group, and then you're a passion project, and then they think, oh, I'm rich, I'm going to open something, and then I'm going to go ski, and then it closes.
But I think the thing about TEDx is the fact that you're bringing together a group of like-minded people, and you create a virtuous cycle. You've got people who want to help each other. They're there to support each other. They are there going, we understand the struggles.
Yeah.
We know what it's like. And I think that is what I find here in Ibiza, more than in London, in fact. Is that you have, it becomes, God, it's all business terms, but that self-fulfilling prophecy of, I want to help you because I know down the line someone's going to help me. And call that karma, call that whatever you want. But it literally is, okay, I've got a challenge here. I don't know how to do it. And someone comes and goes, no, that's fine. I know Jose from over here, he can help it, blah, blah. And then you overcome those obstacles every single time. And I think the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. And that for me was TEDx, right? It's the more you put into it, the more you get out of it.
And in New Yorker terms, we call it scratching each other's back. So I scratch your back, you scratch my back. And to me, it's more
without expecting it. That's the thing.
Yes.
You do things because you want to, not because you're doing it because you want something out of it. And I think that is really important because you can see through people.
Well, but that is to me the difference. The difference from coming from New York and being in Ibiza. When I mean scratching each other's back, I am not going to go to a random person that just like you experience it. Suddenly your phone is not ringing, and there's one friend that calls you in June, July because they want to stay in your house. So that scratching each other's back is not the one that I'm talking about.
No.
It's like, we have businesses here. It gets cold. It gets alone. It gets alone in the winter. And then you create community. And then suddenly I was telling to a friend of mine, like, I'm starting to like not like summer because we are not hanging out because we're busy, you know? And but it's a good busy because now we're collaborating. Now there's trust. Now it's not like I'm waiting for a hotel to open to like push myself into the manager. I'm just fostering community through events that is nonprofit and meeting people with no intent other than, because TEDx to me saved my life when I was in the worst of my lowest. I will pay YouTube Premium and I will put headphones and I will get my intrusive thoughts canceled by any TEDx, Brené Brown, any type of TEDx talk that will help me feel better. And that's why I called Mia and I said, like, I really, really would love to do anything. And then when she gave me the biggest challenge of the four tables and 470 people, that was to me like, if it just felt good.
I don't
like. She'll always lay down the gauntlet, that one. It's like, yep, you want to be part of it? Show me how much you want it. I love it. That's hilarious. That's very, very Miss Kern.
And also, I love the fact that nothing was micromanaged. Nothing was aggressive. Nothing was corporate. Nothing was. Mm. It's like, you're good at what you do. I saw your product. I trust you. Go for it.
Nice. Beautiful. Well, I mean, every little box that has a little cake in it looks a bit like a jewelry box. So, I mean, I was just like a little black bird just circling around the cake table going, I'm going to wait till no one's looking and then I'm going to snaffle one of these bad boys into my handbag. So thank you for that. It was a delicious moment for sure. So why did you start the IVF Daddies podcast? Whose idea was that? I'm going to say it wasn't yours, Richard, even though you're the one with the IVF.
Well, the idea started because he, when 14, 15 years ago, when he's the first British with an American person having kids in America to bring it to Europe.
Not the first, but
one of the first. A pioneer.
Yeah.
A pioneer.
So my ex-husband and I have twins through surrogacy, born in the United States. And then we separated and I met Julio and he was fascinated by the story and obviously wanting to be more involved in our lives and started asking questions. So I wrote a book on surrogacy. I talk at conferences.
That's the part that I knew you were going to play down. That's the part that I knew you were going to play down. But because of what he did, you know, when you're creating your wedding book and then you're like, it's like you're creating your wedding book and then you're like, pictures like a Pinterest. Now it's a Pinterest. Mm-hmm. Before it was like a binder. Mm. So he did that and somebody says, like, this is valuable information. Why don't you make it into a book? So he created the best book of same-sex couple how going through IVF and surrogacy from the US to Europe, to the UK. And then I said to him, because I wanted to trap him, let's do something.
Very dependent much.
Let's do something together that if we're not together, we'll fall apart. And then we created IVF. Like, so I have the kids. The kids are asking questions. The kids are like, oh, do you see how, like.
I see how this relationship works. You do the talking, he does the drinking. It's great.
Yeah. No, but the
kids. Is that why you're so hungover, Richard?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because he has his story, but like, imagine this.
He tells it so you much just tell better it so than much better.
My goodness.
Keep going, babe. Keep going. I'm just going to drink my.
No, just and if you could just bring the bottle and refill us, please.
Sure.
while I just stay my long.
While I stay my long story long.
No, the thing was like, imagine this. My last podcast was the Unseen Love, like. Step parenting in the IV in the LGBTQIA plus. How many stepdads, three dads do you know? And
I don't actually. None. Exactly. You guys are novel. A novelty.
Exactly. So then I go with him to pick up the kids and I'm wearing the kids' clothes. And the moms love me. And now my fashion is for the
you're
school.
You're wearing 12-year-old...
No.
Oh, right. He turns up. You're wearing 12-year-old twins outfits.
He turns up. So for those of you on the audio, Julio is rather handsome. And so he turns up at school and all the mums are like, who the fuck is that? And I'm like, my boyfriend. And they're like,
oh.
Oh.
Bugger.
Hola. They're like thinking, yeah, anyway. So then
imagine like American, British, Latin person in London with like bureaucracy. And all their friends are like, oh, you will never get it because you're not from here, darling. And then all this, and then I'm like, the kids are asking questions. I'm like, I don't know what the kids know. Mm. And then I talked to Richard and I read his book. And then I said, this book is amazing. Why don't we make it into digital? Mm. Like, update it. Like, mm-hmm. why don't we just... Also, and then I started traveling with him to all the, like, the work experience. Mm. Because I normally do cultural and digital positioning for brands. Like... Mm-hmm. Brands like IVF, like how do you make that into TikTok or Instagram or podcast? Mm. And now we know about depression, anxiety, like you have a post, you repost it. How do we do that with IVF? Why do we have to wait until women feel broken? Why do we have to wait like endometriosis or like, why do you have to wait until it's too late? When somebody asks you your egg count or your fertility. So these things to me, when I hear it from the doctors, it's like the pituitary gland level of, it's like Sofia Vergara in my head talking to a German doctor. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So we need to make a podcast. You're pragmatic and I can make the dumb questions. Mm-hmm. And I will be like, Paris Hilton on a reality show froze her eggs. Yay.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
then
we're basically destigmatizing the taboo around infertility.
Mm.
Because again, infertility is something you don't know you have until you have it.
Mm.
But you don't have.
But why not? Why are people not tested in advance when you're in your 20s? Why are women, when you're going to your gynecologist, why are they not saying, hey, we're going to do this. Mm. We're going to test your antral follicle count, how many eggs you have. We're going to test your hormone levels. Mm. Like that, I don't understand. And that is one of the things that we're trying to do, educate people so that when they do go to their doctor, they can say, hey, I heard this random podcast of these two gay guys doing this and they told me to do, what is this?
Mm.
And it's just education because you got to learn somehow.
Have you had feedback from a lot of women that have said that to you? They've heard your podcast and they've actually done something about it.
Oh yeah. My God. Like the amount of stories it made me do the podcast in Spanish because Spanish like is also religious. Mm. It's also cultural. Mm. It's also, for example, before we started filming, we were talking about my friend Luisana. She's going to kill me. My friend Luisa. Before.
My friend.
No.
Do a loud click.
Before,
no more Rosie for Richard.
Before we were talking
or flamenco
about,
dancing classes.
Before
I like to a mudra.
Before, oh my God!
Have you got the right shoes on?
Come on, Macarena.
Hey, Macarena.
Oh my God, the ADHD here is legit.
That was a good outtake. I liked it.
No, but before we started recording the podcast, Richard said, oh, Luisa just got engaged and married with the baby and the photo looked beautiful. And I had her in my podcast talking about PCOS. Did you know what PCOS is?
Endometriosis, no?
No.
It's something to do with it. Polycystic. I see, no.
Exactly.
There you go.
So, and you are a woman. So, but...
I think so. On a good day.
Feline.
I mean, you cis woman. I don't know how you like. Maybe. Well,
let's just move on.
So, but this thing was that she.
This is why I drink. Sorry, just because long stories longer, short stories long.
And I also add a razzle dazzle just for the sake of it.
Jazzle your vajazzle.
Yeah. Okay, so but no, the long story short of this long story long. The thing was that she, when she had PCOS and she said to the boyfriend, babe, I have PCOS and if we're going to be in a relationship, can we both go to an IVF clinic and check your sperm count and my eggs? That's the first person that I have ever heard saying to the relationship, not waiting until you reach infertility, because sex is fun. Mm. On the clock? Nah.
It's so true. It's so true. Yeah.
And then you think the baby's going to save your life, and then it's not going to sleep.
Yeah. So that's how the podcast came about.
Interesting. Interesting. And how has the stepfathership been going for you?
Oh, that is like walking on a tightrope and the highest mountain ever. And between the, like, one day I'm a third child and one day I'm too strict, or one day I triangulate Richard with the kids and I tell him, can you tell the kids to not be in the iPad for too long so we can get ready? And then he's like, oh my God, you're telling me that I'm a bad parent. I'm like, when did that come from? I'm just saying, go tell the kids, because if I say it, I want to be his friend. I don't want to, like...
Yeah.
Also, I grew up with two moms. Like, my parents divorced. My second stepmom was my mom. She's like my mom. My dad divorced her, and his third wife by default. I mean, if you like her, go for it. And my... I couldn't care less who she is or what she does. And my mom married, and he was my stepdad. So I know the difference between two moms with my sisters, that if we say the word half sisters, you're dead. Like, whomever calls us half sisters, that she actually got engaged yesterday. We had a whole long conversation about the engagement ring. Congratulations to you, Sabrina. And then
and all my fans.
But I know the difference between a stepfather.
I know. I'm just like, oh my God, that wedding. If there's gonna be like,
oh, where were you?
And your dad.
No, no,
no.
No.
I'm busy that weekend.
We already went through it. We already talked about it, because what I show him a picture of, we went to my dad's third wedding. My stepfather, my mom, the five siblings, everybody was in the wedding, and my sister was in Miami traveling with my mom, that is not her mom, and she bumped into a friend, and she's like, where are you going? No, we're going to my dad's wedding. I'm like, and who are you? Is that, like, what? It's like, yeah, my dad divorced, and is that your mom? No, that's not my...
That's his first.
It's like, that's not my mom. That's a long story. That's my brother's mom. That's my dad's first wife. The friend left the room.
So the IVF daddy's thing basically feels quite uncomplicated compared to your natural family, which sounds epic.
Yeah, but
I love it.
But the step parenting, back to your question, since you insist.
Back to my question. Yeah.
Since you.
Just need more wine.
I've got some here.
Since you insist.
Don't panic.
No, it's like one of the things that step parenting, I realize, is when you family is made out of who chooses to stay and show up. Your kid did not know if the stock exchange went down, if you have to go to a work meeting. Your kid only knows if you're here or if you're not. So being a step parent, as much as I don't know if I have authority one day, I don't know if I'm a third child one day, I don't know. Like, when you hear from the kid's mouth saying, I feel like I have three dads, that is when I feel like I belong. But then when you fall from the tightrope and you choose to climb the mountain together in the middle of the storm, that is family. That, to me, is the definition of family.
Step-parenting is hard. Parenting is hard. Mm-hmm. But choosing to do it every single day.
And we get hard by being a dad. And we get hard by being a dad and a stepdad.
Exactly. But you know this, like, sitting in a hospital room with a child that's not technically yours, you choose that. You are there. You're showing up. You're being there for them. Nobody's asking you to do that. You're doing that because you care and because you love. And I see that with him and the kids. And it's great.
Mm. Well, I have an amazing stepdad, which also helped.
Yeah.
I mean, his example of what a stepparent can be, right? Is like, oh, wow, that's not, you know, I would say I have equal love in my life in many ways for my dad, who is an amazing dad. But I don't know, if I got married tomorrow, I don't know who'd be walking me down the aisle. I think it would have to be, I'd have to have one on either arm.
Yeah.
I couldn't possibly choose, because they're both incredible, amazing, and biological you know, it doesn't mean anything in that scenario.
All you need is love. Literally all anybody needs in this world is to be loved, to be heard, to be seen, to be validated, and to be loved.
Well, my sister worked down the aisle. My sister worked down the aisle with my dad and my stepdad. And my brother worked down the aisle with my mom and my stepmom.
Oh, you see, there you go. That's what I would have to do for sure. It wouldn't feel right. I would feel totally disingenuous if I didn't do that.
Honey, in Ibiza,
but I think my dad might be a teeny bit heartbroken. Maybe that's in my head, but I'd have to have that conversation.
No, he won't. There's a moment in life where when you're young, you don't want to miss the first walk, the first tooth. Even sometimes,
I still have their teeth in a little thingy. No. Oh, no, they're not listening. Shit.
No.
Oh.
They're not listening.
Tooth Fairy has them.
He lies. When it's just when it's lies. Christmas, I'm like,
dude, I'm a liar because I'm a liar because I still believe in Santa Claus. Therefore, my entire persona is a liar.
The most expensive gift, it was me. Not the person that was
but the best
one,
cake.
Not some random old not man some, that you're sitting on his lap.
I had to sit on some random
back
old
man. Back to the Pope again.
I had to sit on some random old man to get your gift. And then he works one day out of the year and gets all the credit.
Wow. Well, you know, on that note, I know that this has been over an hour, so we're going to have to stop here because I think you two and I could talk till the cows come home. But they're not going to come home because we won't go back down that road either.
We can go to the alpaca farm.
Oh, I did Bart and his wife, San, for the Earth Day episode a couple of years ago.
It's Earth Day today.
I love those guys.
It's Earth Day today.
Is it today?
Today.
No way.
Yeah.
This feels very earthy.
And just as a highlight of Earth Day, can you say that?
Earth Day?
As a highlight of Earth Day?
Yes. In patisserie, we try to use everything from our agriturismo to the kitchen and the best products and no preservatives, no seed oils, nothing. Everything is just composed. It's the wastage control. The most amazing way to celebrate Ibiza. That's why we're the corner of Paris in the heart of Ibiza.
That's impressive, though, for a lab in Figueretas, because I don't think there's anybody around Figueretas. I could be completely wrong. I'm very judgmental, actually, but I would love to know what that footprint actually kind of looks like in a place like that.
We're happy to have you.
We drive, yesterday I was picking strawberries. So cool.
Beautiful.
Love it. Yeah.
Well, I'm a huge fan and I will be back many, many times. So we shall put your links into the episode show notes.
Yeah.
And for your podcast.
And I'm going to leave you hanging with this. Like, how about you think about what it would be like to have a round table talk of people that are doing an impact here. Maybe we start with 3-4 and create a channel that celebrates or vent all the issues of what it's like to have a business in Ibiza.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
The riotous rebel wild. Rebellion.
I'm ready. I'm ready with all the R's.
Podcast Anonymous.
Bye. Thank you. You two little rosé fiends. Wonderful to meet you on a Tuesday morning, after a long bank holiday of drinking, just what the doctor ordered.
Keep going.
And your yacht is about to leave, so you need to get ready.
I'm off. Aye, aye, Captain. Ciao for now.
Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel.